This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
City Limits.
Brought to us by the People's Committee for Melbourne every Wednesday at 9am.
City Limits is Melbourne's only hour devoted to our urban environment.
To transport and planning and housing issues.
To privatisations and our utility services.
To building and or maintaining a sense of community. 855 on the AM band, if we can hear it through the noise and find it through the smog.
City Limits.
Yes, here we are over the acres of tar and cement, which I rode over this morning. Pleasant morning for a ride again, Marty.
Good morning, Kevin. Morning.
I'm Kevin Healy. Marty got the short straw again. Bad luck, yeah.
Very happy to have the short straw, Kevin.
There it goes. And this morning, it's second Wednesday of the month. It means the day we do environmental type issues. And we're sort of mixing transport and environment today. I suppose they come together anyway, don't they? You can put them together very easily. There's a campaign going on in the Banyule area, the North East Link project. I think we know it's causing massive disruption. It's anyone who's been out and seen it, it's just an enormous roadworks that causing major disruption and will in future cause further disruption. But a wildlife corridor was promised in the Banyule area. To allow wildlife, obviously, to be able to move around. And then quietly it was withdrawn. It was only at a meeting when someone asked a question they discovered it had been quietly withdrawn. And so there's a campaign on around that issue. So I'm going to be talking to Michelle Jobus, who's the president of Friends of Banyule this morning, and also talk to Jo Conlon, a former Moreland councillor. She is also running a campaign. She's actually currently urging local government to in turn lobby the state government to make wildlife corridors compulsory in all planning schemes and all plans so that they have no way of wheedling out of it. They've got to do it. And
sounds like a good idea.
So we'll talk to both of those women this morning and on City Limits. And there we are. Cup of tea.
Oh, I'd love a cup of tea.
Cup of tea. I'll just pour you a cup of tea. You've got a green cup. Or a cup with what looks like, I presume, People's Liberation Army soldiers, and it's all in Chinese.
I'll take the green cup.
The green cup.
Okay. What are we drinking here? We're doing,
it's just jasmine again today, because there was a bit left over from last week and the thing's up, so I've added some to it. So it's, yeah, that's right, yeah.
That'll do nicely.
Not in the tea. I mean, at home when I opened it, there was still some from last week I hadn't put in. So there you are. That's what happened. I think we have to admire the Australian Financial Review, the Capitalist Review as we call it, because they've realised that war is so violent that, you know, it's not good. A big front page headline right across the page last Thursday, war threatens to become violent, but its market's muted reaction to war threatens to become violent. Stuff the human beings being killed. It's the market, stupid. It's the market.
So, yeah, the markets. It's been getting quite a lot of airtime.
Yes, that's right. The poor market. So obviously if the filthy rich become a little less filthy rich, that's bad for all of us. And so it's the market. And hang the poor people being killed across the Middle East and in Lebanon. What's the Middle East? Lebanon's the Middle East. Everywhere across there at the moment. And worry about the poor rich becoming slightly less rich.
And maybe not being able to drive where they want to drive because they can't get the fuel they need.
So you've got to get your priorities right in these things, haven't you? But it does say violent, which is good, but it's violent against the market, not people. That's not bad.
And one take.
Yeah, one take. And Donald Trump and his campaign, is now we know that Cuba's next on the list and that his Secretary of U.S. of State certainly wants to get Cuba. And Donald said, I'll take care of Cuba and its bad regime, he said this week. And I thought Donald talking about a bad regime really is. I mean, he also talked about he wouldn't want another lunatic to take over in Iran. And I thought, well, you know, all these bloody lunatics that took over in the White House 14 months ago and got hold of the Pentagon and all the toys for the boys. And, you know, Don, to talk about lunatics and bad government, for God's sake.
I suppose it's sort of one-way traffic, isn't it?
It is one-way traffic. And Australia, whatever they do, Australia just agrees with. And now we're sending a plane and troops across there, but we're not being aggressive. We're not involved in the war. Just before I came here,
they refer to it as.
Yeah, well, I was alternating between our brekkie show and the ABC brekkie show this mm-hmm. morning, and the ABC one interviewed the Greens spokesperson David Shoebridge, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And he really got stuck into them, saying, "Yes, we are. You know, once we go there, we are in fact part of the war machine." And
He has been pretty vocal, and his voice is the one sort of different voice you're hearing coming out of Canberra the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, and you know, he made the point that even if it's not directly involved, you're freeing up other people to be directly involved by mm-hmm. taking the pressure off them, etc. So mm-hmm. it has all those impacts.
Mm.
But then our wonderful Minister for Train Killing, Richard Marles, he of the giant mind, Colonel Marles, as we know, because he was made a colonel by Kentucky, and no one quite knows how.
Was he? Was.
Yeah, years ago, there was a story about it. Even when he was working at the ACTU, they made him a colonel. No one can work out why. You know, someone said, "Why would a low-level union official from Geelong be given this?" But we wait to see. So he apparently calls himself colonel in some areas, and his office is full of American paraphernalia. He's a real US of file, American US, not American, uh-huh. US of. That's part of America, US of file. So he's never going to defy America or anything anyway. But he has announced this week that we do intend to spend lots and lots more in the budget, because America's told us we have to, on defence. So at the same time as we're looking at cutting back desperately in other areas of need, he says we're going to spend a lot more on defence. So.
Well, that was the message coming out of the White House at the start of this most recent administration, wasn't it? That everybody, allies, had to ramp up their spending. So there's a strategy, I suppose, that's been in place.
Yep. So it's all toys for the boys and fun. While in the meantime, big business last week was calling out for welfare and NDIS, disability payments, etc., all to be slashed because we can't afford them. We need to pour that money into productivity and tax cuts for the rich. So it goes on and on. And yet you've got people still saying that the Hawke Keating Kelty era that brought us all this, that brought us neoliberal capitalism, was a great period of reform. In fact, I think it was a great period of going way, way backwards. And we continue to. There's also a problem which was exposed in the last week or so about lots of people. There's about 300 people a night being, they call it, decanted around police stations because of the bail laws. There's so many people not getting bail, they can't fit them into prisons or remand sections.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got all these people being moved around. But also, once you move them around, you can reset the clock in terms of how long you have to keep them before certain things have to happen. So people who's been held for long periods, there was an Indigenous bloke held for days and days and days. There's a 14-day limit, but one Indigenous bloke was held for 26 days in police cells where you get no light and, you know, you can't get visitors, you don't know phone access. It's quite dreadful what's happening. And this is all to do with the bail laws, which are going to, in fact, become even worse shortly. So it's a real problem.
That is. So what do they? Can they sort of reset the clock on how long they have them for if they move them around?
Apparently, I think that's what they're implying. If you move them from one to another, the 14 days start again, apparently, or whatever. But it's a way of keeping them without having to put them into a remand area that's mm-hmm. overflowing already. And in fact, Victorian legal aid data, in the 9 months since the bail amendments were passed, it's become harder for First Nations people and people experiencing or at risk of homelessness to be granted bail when compared with the previous year. The rate of bail being granted to First Nations people dropped from 70% to 50%, and those experiencing or facing homelessness from 63% to 44%. And it happened as more people experience homelessness, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a real problem, and it's just again the state government caving into the Murdochs of this world, particularly the Murdoch of this world, and they're screaming and yelling about crime and bail and all that stuff. So it's just pretty dreadful.
I wonder if that one will get much of a look in before the next state election.
Well, they'll probably go even tougher. Yeah, got to be tough on crime. Yeah, my God. So, there we are. Now, Innes Willocks is one of our very favourite people. He's with the Australian Industry Group.
Yes.
And Innes is pretty upset at the moment because, you know, it's hard to believe, but the ACTU wants an extra week's leave for workers. An extra week's, I mean, for God's sake. Do they think caring employers are made of money, for God's sake? I mean, do you want a bit of a top-up?
I'm going all right, thank you. Yeah, I'm going okay.
I'll just top mine up there. Anyway, this is...
Yes, one caught my eye, actually. It's very interesting.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, and they claim that it makes up for the fact that workers these days often work unpaid anyway and do extra hours per week, which can be made up for by the extra week's leave, which is a silly argument, isn't it? I mean, why shouldn't workers give a little bit back to their boss, who gives them a pay every week, some weeks anyway? Innes is particularly upset.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Innes said, "We face a productivity crisis that's driving up inflation, putting pressure on interest rates, leading to declining living standards," which is all he cares about. He wants workers to be better off, and they can't be if they want wages and conditions, can they?
Hmm. Well, I think there's a few other things that are probably contributing to inflation, Innes.
like his lot putting up their prices. That's not a bad start.
Hmm.
Other little factors like greed, those sort of things come into it, but that's beside the point.
War.
"An extra week off will solve none of these problems. It would just make them worse," Innes said. Poor Innes. "Only those living in a fool's paradise would argue for more leave with no productivity dividend in a country where businesses are under real pressure, where we can't get near our targets on new housing, etc., etc., etc."
Fool's paradise.
Fool's paradise. We're living in fool's paradise if we believe that workers deserve an extra week's leave.
Get rid of that idea.
There is a simple solution to all this, I think, because every time workers ask for a wage increase or improved conditions, the employers are forced to tell them the time is not right. This is just not right at the moment. This will destroy the economy. Now, if unions and workers were smart, they'd wait for the employers to tell them when the time is right.
Perfect window to discuss it.
to have a wage rise and better conditions, etc. And then problem solved.
Just wait for the right time.
That's right. It hasn't yet occurred ever.
Where will this one go? I mean, how hard will it get pushed by the ACTU?
I'm assuming they'll keep pushing it. The bosses will keep pushing back and eventually something will happen. But who knows? But it seems to me to be quite a reasonable claim, but that's not the way the bosses see it.
Well, it's many, many years ago now, decades before, when they had the last big win with the 8 hour. How many hours in the week? The working week. How long ago was that? It was decades ago or something.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, and of course, I think it was in about 72 or so. I remember we were in the, as I said, I think I said last week on the show, we were in the John Curtin Hotel celebrating equal pay for women being given by the courts. But the figures currently show there's still an 11.5% gap.
Yes.
It's obviously
getting smaller though.
Yeah, obviously it's just a problem catching up. It takes a while to sort it out. Yeah. Now, a couple of very wise economists, a bloke who's Peter Swan, who's Emeritus Professor of Finance at UNSW Business School and a bloke who works for an eminence advisory, have written a joint piece telling us that Adam Smith was correct. Government has to get out of the way. The problem with our economy is the government is too much, his fingers are too much in the pie. Yeah, the anniversary of the Wealth of Nations falls this week. That's the book he wrote, of course, Adam Smith. It would be a fitting occasion for Canberra to mark the moment, not with ceremony, but with an Adam Smith book club and a bonfire of the interventions that have made Australians measurably poorer.
Bonfire?
Yes, burn the books. No, don't burn it. Burn Capital. Don't burn Wealth of Nations. There's a whole article pointing out that things work much better for everybody when government gets out of the way and lets business do its own thing, and that's when things work brilliantly for everybody.
The line that the new opposition leader will be taking, so he'll be on a winner.
That's right, and it's the new, well, the, I think the everybody might not include the everybody who work, but that's that doesn't matter, does it? No. And they keep praising, of course, they still always keep praising that Hawke Keating era, which lets you know that it was pretty dreadful. When the bosses keep telling you, we've got to go back to the Hawke Keating era and Labor's got to go back to that, you know that that was a pretty dreadful era for the working class.
That was back, you were covering some of those issues that time.
I was, way back then, that's right.
It would have been an interesting time.
Yes, it was. Yes. It certainly was. Bob Hawke and I were so close, of course. In a debate, in fact, this is as an aside, the last meeting we had at Trades Hall of the old ALP executive before federal intervention in 1970, Bob Hawke, I moved a motion about the age was excoriating us every day, and I just moved a motion for the fun of it that they be banned from any future press conferences. And Bob Hawke, in the course of the debate, called me a juvenile and puerile. And my response was that was tautological. That was one of our great debates way back then.
Did everyone retreat to the John Curtin after that?
After that, we did it. Well, we did, but after intervention, the right wing went to the John Curtin and the left wing went down the corner to the Dover, which is no longer there, but we went to the Dover. So Hawke and Co. went to the Curtin and we all went to the Dover. But anyway, that executive was claimed to be sort of, you know, this terrible left-wing executive. And in fact, if you look at it after intervention, it split in half almost. Half of them became part of the right faction and about half left and half sort of just dissipated into society somewhere. But that was that. Anyway, that's part of history. Labor is looking at... Oh, look, I've got some very sad news, unfortunately, too. Before we go to our guest, I'll just read one piece. And I won't go to the sad news because it's about poor Andrew's daughters who've been banned from future royal things for a while.
Oh, yes, okay.
Till the dust settles.
It's a lot of dust.
Poor things. It's awful, isn't it? They can't even go to the marches, they can't even be in the parades and things with the gear they wear.
Yeah, they might be waiting a while.
Yeah. The woman who won that by-election seat, the Greens woman who won the by-election seat, and when Farage thought his party was going to walk in just in the last couple of weeks, a couple of comments she made I think really interesting. She says, because working hard used to get you something, it got you a house, a nice life, holidays, it got you somewhere, but now... Working hard, what does that get you? Because talk to anyone here and they will tell you the people who work hard can't put food on the table, can't get their kids' school uniforms, can't put their heating on, can't live off the pension they worked hard to save for, can't even begin to dream about ever having a holiday ever because life has changed. Instead of working for a nice life, we're working to line the pockets of billionaires. We are being bled dry. And I don't think it's extreme or radical to think working hard should get you a nice life. Not a bad comment.
Not bad at all.
Not a bad comment. Farage said the election was a victory for sectarian voting and cheating. Not that she won because of those principles.
Fujitsu. I've heard that somewhere else.
Yeah, you've got to stretch your mind, haven't you?
Yeah, jeepers. Oh, dearie me.
Okay, look, we'll go to our guests. We're going to get... firstly, we'll get Michelle Jovis on the line and we'll talk about wildlife crossings. And on the line we have Michelle Jovis, who's president of Friends of Banyule. Michelle, before we go to the actual issue of these wildlife crossings, I was out there recently. Those roadworks are absolutely massive and causing great disruption. But could you just tell us, what was the area like before the work started? What area are we talking about?
Well, North East Link is a 29-kilometre-long project, and it's going through the middle of 30 suburbs across Melbourne. The area in Watsonia and Yolande, was, you know, quite beautiful. Greensboro Highway was two lanes in, you know, both directions. And on one side, we had 13 hectares of beautiful woodland that was actually, you know, it was close to the public, but you could drive past and see the beautiful trees and, you know, see kangaroos, beautiful birds, magnificent trees that were many hundreds of years old. And it was, you know, it made you happy driving past it. And, you know, there was beautiful, like, open space along it and magnificent trees, you know, and it's also the works impact the Eastern Freeway, and that was, and Boleyn Road. So it was just a, you know, a narrow road with just beautiful, like a Sierra Valley and Banyule Creek, which is a, you know, a small tributary, and they've... all those areas have been absolutely smashed with massive road construction works in a that is constrained by being very narrow area, trying to have a narrow footprint, and thousands of homes on alongside it as well that have been really badly impacted, and businesses. We lost over 100 businesses, small businesses in, you know, Boleyn, for example. So it's a huge project with massive impacts to the community, and at the moment they're all adverse impacts.
And what wildlife is involved in this area?
Well, it was so the Simpson Arms Barracks forms part of a wildlife corridor, and so that we would have kangaroos travelling from the Plenty Gorge area and making their way down to Banyule Flats. So there's kangaroos, wallabies, other people, you know, seeing wombats and echidnas, and, you know, numerous birds, powerful owl. Well, I guess what to summarise it, we lived in a little patch of beauty and nature that's just been completely decimated by the North East Link without any regard to saving any of it. And, you know, and we were, you know, around about 15 k's from the CBD, and we could enjoy, you know, beauty and native animals. So, you know, from that point of view, there's a lot of, the community feels a lot of devastation, and the fact that we've lost, you know, 40,000 trees that, NELP did, and contractors did nothing to save.
Are there any trees left?
Well, on the edges. No, it's on the actual project site, which is about 250 hectares, there's very little left. So it's devastating, and it's, you know, you have, you know, to see beautiful areas of your home destroyed like that is it's heartbreaking.
And they could probably tell you they're doing great things for the area. I know when the Coonung Creek was destroyed and the East Link went through there, they tore down trees, they redirected the creek, they put a freeway through the middle. People objected madly, but then they said they had enhanced the quality of the creek valley.
So not really.
The mind sort of boggles at what they consider making things better.
Yeah, well, it's not. I mean, turning a creek into a drain is not making things better. But as part of this project, the Kunnun Creek has been destroyed again, like the Eastern Freeway. You know, I actually don't advocate down that area, but the devastation along the Eastern Freeway is also mind-boggling. And that's part of this, you know, North East Link project.
Yeah. The justification at the start was they said that Greensboro Road needed to be linked to East Link, didn't they? That's the excuse for putting this through there.
Yeah, it was supposed to connect the Metropolitan Ring Road with the Eastern Freeway and, you know, take trucks off the road. So it's really been designed for freight. But it wasn't the best route. It's the most damaging route. And I think, I'm not sure, I think the justification is that the government will be able to maximise toll road revenue, and they didn't care about community health or the environment in any shape or form.
Speaking of which, you know, let's get to the issue, the wildlife crossing. This was promised. Just go back to the history of this wildlife crossing situation.
Well, when NELP works commenced in 2020, since then we've had numerous and regular kangaroo deaths on major roads like Greensboro Highway, Rosanna Road, and Manningham Road, Bulleen Road. And what happens as part of the project, they do the project of urban design and landscape plan is prepared. And what happens with that is there's like token community consultation, and the NELP received over 250 submissions from businesses, residents, local councils, and they, in response to that, they announced that they would be delivering a wildlife crossing at Banyule Creek near Lambie, and everyone was, you know, pleased that that's some sort of silver lining, that we would stop the kangaroos being displaced and distressed or killed. And that was on their webpage, and a diagram in the urban design and landscape plan that the minister approved, the planning minister. And then at a, I'm part of the North East Link Community Liaison Group, and they were told that we were told that some drainage works at Banyule Creek would be occurring in the vicinity at Lower Plenty Road. And I just sort of said, oh, and you'll be doing the wildlife crossing at the same time, because that made sense. And then they said, yes, we're putting up two poles and a ladder. And I just sort of said, well, how are kangaroos going to climb that? And it was just, like taken away. And it's, first of all, they promise it to alleviate some of the harm. And then, you know, without being upfront, it's removed from the project. And what we have instead of a wildlife crossing is that NELP will deliver a gross pollutant trap in that vicinity to stop litter from going downstream. And it's... And we get a rope ladder that it might be fine for climbing species like possums, but it's not going to help the kangaroos that are already displaced and trapped. And it's sort of mind-boggling that, you know, the NELP are delivering, you know, 6.5-kilometre three-lane tunnels, but they can't deliver us a wildlife crossing. And there's something really wrong.
It's pretty extraordinary. They said the removal of the underpass was based on advice from ecological experts, and presume that wasn't you, and considered the length of the crossing, availability of natural light, and the movement of native animals in the area. Is any credence to that argument?
Yeah, well, on the face of it, you know, that sounds reasonable, because they don't want to attract wildlife to it, because it is going to build up. You know, it is built up now. But the thing is, the animals are already there. They are already crossing the road. They're already being killed or distressed. We have kangaroo rescues in Yolambie, Rosanna. It's not correct, and we need to be doing what we can for our poor wildlife.
Yeah, look, we'll bring Joe Conlon in at this stage. Joe, of course, many long-term listeners might remember Joe for a period there also co-presented on this program. And she is a former Moreland, I think it was council when she was there before it was Mary Beck. But Joe's involved with a group that's attempting to make wildlife corridors compulsory in all planning. Joe, can you tell us something about this campaign you're on?
Sure. The group I'm involved with is called Animal Active. We're currently running a campaign which would put wildlife movement corridors into every planning scheme. It might not have helped in this project, although it probably would have, because it's like the wildlife is the last thing that happens. So the project goes ahead and then someone realises the project or the development has run over what was a wildlife corridor. So kangaroos go along their normal movement corridor, bump into a development, then they start deviating, so they either get hit on a road or they end up, as some examples we've got, they end up landlocked. So it just seems like we spend billions on these projects. The least we can do is try and make it a bit easier for the animals that we live with, and particularly kangaroos are problematic because they are bigger. Little ones like kidneys and all that sort of stuff are not so hard to cater for, but we do really need to start catering for kangaroo movement. And it's, you know, particularly the peri-urban councils where there's a huge amount of killing. There was a government inquiry on this last year, road strike killing, and projects like this one. It's a disgrace that a project that's so expensive like that one hasn't actually allowed for wildlife corridors.
Yeah, in fact, they promised it and then took it away again, of course. But how are you going about this campaign?
So we spoke to the minister's office, and that they were, you know, open to the idea. And we're now going to different councils and asking the councils to formally agree with us and to put a request to the minister. So we're in that process now, and we're focusing on the peri-urban councils, the ones that they've got development moving out. So that's the best opportunity to get them in before development occurs. It's always harder to retrofit things, but it's not impossible, but harder and more expensive to retrofit. But it's in trying to get it jump ahead of development, so that development has to include this in the process. Yeah. So it's going to be a long haul, but I think so far we've got good hearings. Councils are pretty keen on it because for councils, kangaroo road strike is a big issue. Their communities hate it. They're distressed. They spend money on removing dead bodies. They have, you know, all the complaints that go with having dead bodies as kids go to school and all that sort of stuff. So the councils are pretty supportive so far.
And, of course, as urban sprawl and the green wedges keep getting taken over by development, this is just going to become increasingly a problem.
Yeah, and it's solvable. You can just allow them, you know, they're pretty... Any wildlife rescuer could tell you, could map out the corridors in their area where the kangaroos move from where to where. So it's just that when you develop, you just make sure those corridors remain open. It's not like it's big swathes of open space or anything. It's just keeping the corridors open so they can get out. They can move around without having to cross major roads. When they get to major roads, there should be, as it appears there's not here, there should be under or overpasses so they can keep moving.
Yeah, absolutely. Michelle, any comment at this stage on this?
Oh, I'm in full agreement with Joe. And it's, you know, it is distressing when kangaroos are hit or out of place, and it's, you know, it's cruel, and it also is a hazard. But so, you know, in full agreement, you know, we need better planning, and, you know, we will still be advocating for our wildlife crossing at Banyule Creek to be completed as promised.
Yes.
And I guess the other thing, yeah, is that there's just a total lack of accountability and, you know, not putting in the wildlife crossing actually is a breach of the project's environmental performance requirements. But it just seems that they're Nelpton just flagrantly disregard the environmental performance requirements. And I don't understand why the minister does not make them accountable.
Yeah.
Yes, it's not a government that's got huge animal credentials. I think the duck shooting season starts again this weekend for a couple of months of slaughter, so 500,000 ducks will go under in the next 2.5 months. It's not a government with great wildlife credentials, unfortunately.
Yeah, the duck season is the same as last year. They can kill as many as they did last year. Yeah,
that's right. And it was about 500,000 last year.
Yeah, a rope ladder with a sign saying possums climb here isn't good enough, you don't think?
Well, interestingly enough, the rope ladder, they've got rope ladders across the Hume Freeway, and things like possums and that, and even goannas have been seen crossing it. So wildlife will work out where the crossings are, but it actually obviously doesn't work for kangaroos or the large or wallabies. They'll work for some.
Yes. The North East Link itself, I mean, I was out there recently and it is absolutely disruptive and so huge. But there's been one or two major problems. Like at one stage, I know Byron talked about roll on their deep and dark blue ocean roll, but the Banyule Creek turned a bright blue that was nothing to do with the ocean.
It was sort of electric blue, and that was a large spill of dust suppressant that weren't upfront about with the community. And there's also been incredible issues with dust and noise and light pollution. The project is overlit and lights up the night sky incredibly. The dust along Greensboro Highway is just unbelievable, and I really feel for the residents and businesses along there,
and the wildlife.
Vegetation is just covered in this thick dust that people are breathing in, and I have asked NELP, what do you do about they've got air monitoring stations, and I just have they recorded any exceedances? And they go, no, they haven't. And I find that really strange because, they're measuring PM 2.5 and PM 10 and they're, can indicate dust and diesel fume pollution. And for some reason, I don't understand, no exceedances. And these are, these air monitoring stations are near very busy roads when, you would expect from time to time exceedances happen just from normal traffic flow. And yet with, massive B-double truck movements every 90 seconds and incredible dust clouds over this roads and homes, there's no exceedances recorded. And it's, it's quite bizarre. And we want the project to improve and for the construction practices to improve. So we're pointing out the issues to NELP and really want them to own the issues and to do something about it. But, they just sort of say, not a problem, we're not exceeding our limits or try and hide things. And we've got the sinkhole in Heidelberg, in the oval in Heidelberg, and we also have bubbling in the Yarra that's been occurring for about 7 weeks, and that's from the tunnel boring operations from pressurised air. So we're concerned about the impact on the Yarra River and for how long that's going to continue for.
Is the sinkhole still there?
Well, they've got a concrete plug in it, and there's remedial works are still taking place, and the tunnel boring machines are proceeding very cautiously because, you know, I just know we're concerned about the possibility of more sinkholes.
And, of course, in transport terms, it's just, again, it's going to get more and more cars on the road. It when it gets to East Link, I think there's something like 21 or something lanes or something enormous.
It's enormous.
And the possibility of ever having what was promised originally anyway, a Doncaster rail link, which it became a freeway, that's just out the window completely now, I would think.
Well, the Doncaster rail has been replaced by busway, you know, express bus lanes. And, you know, I guess another concern is with the incredible tripling of the eastern freeway in places, that there will be normal freeway and expressway lanes. And we're concerned that another issue is that the expressway lanes will be tolled. You know, and, you know, we're not hearing a lot about that. And we do know 100% that the tunnel will be tolled. And so we're paying, as well as building a surface road alongside Greensboro Highway. So it's, you know, you've got a tolled road and a Greensboro Highway, which is going to be called, turned into Greensboro Boulevard, so competing with a tunnel. So it's quite a bizarre project.
Mm. And, Joe, I think it's fair to say once it opens and East Link is so enormous, the pressure's on again for the East-West Link, don't you think? I mean, once again, they'll be screaming and yelling saying we need that.
It depends who the winner is in November, I think.
Yeah, maybe.
It could well be the LNP.
Yeah.
Because they're very fond of it. It's their big project.
Yeah, well, it does make the East-West Link more logical, you know, like, need to occur. So it's been an awful project right from the start. You know, it shouldn't have happened. We could have had road improvements without this. So it's just... And we could have spent so many more billions on public transport and other areas of need in the state.
On that last point, what is the public transport situation in that area vis-a-vis the roads?
Well, I think in the outer northeastern suburbs, you would say that there's transport poverty. People are forced into driving and using toll roads. You know, people that can least afford it with the least disposable income. We do have the Hurstbridge train line, and we do have bus routes, but they don't always take you to where you want to go. They're infrequent and unreliable, so that we could have had much better outcomes with improved public transport services.
The road was originally estimated to cost $10 billion. It's currently reached $26 billion. Won't be completed until 28, so it's probably going to cost a hell of a lot more. That money could have been much better spent on other things in the area, I would have thought.
Oh, 100%. I think there's a hospital was promised in Greensboro area that hasn't been delivered. You know, schools, health services, aged care services, of course, could have been better spent, but, you know, we don't have that. We've got destruction and, you know, damaging of people's health with dust and noise and, you know, the loss of habitat, vegetation, and dreadful impacts to, you know, biodiversity. It's quite, you know, it's been a folly, like an engineer's dream, and it's just, you know, out of control.
Joe, you're an engineer, but you didn't dream this one up, I'm sure. As an engineer, I would have thought if you're spending $26 billion or whatever it is now, it's really penny-pinching to suggest you can't put in a wildlife corridor.
Yeah, it's like not even more than tea money. That's right. That's right. We could have had a lot of overpass, a lot of underpasses and other things that would have made a big difference to the wildlife outcomes out there. With not much money.
Yeah. Yeah, so so your campaign, where do you take it from here? You're still fighting with local government?
We're talking with local government. They've been responsive. They're starting to send letters into the minister. So we've got a petition circulating. So just generally advocating this as an election year, so it's a good year to try and push to get it to happen. And it supports a parliamentary inquiry that happened last year on road strike, and it also made recommendations similar to this. So we're not the only ones doing it. It's actually been recommended from a few different directions.
And what sort of response have you had from government people at this stage?
From the Minister for Planning's office, not her, but the office, it's been quite positive. And the Minister for Environment's office is quite positive. But, you know, that just means it's quite positive. It doesn't mean that they're going to do anything. But, so they're not negative anyway, which is a good start.
Yeah.
But whether there's a will to do anything, I don't know. In those peri-urban areas, it's a real issue. People are quite distressed at always having to do that. There are wildlife carers who go out every morning to go and assess all the damage on the roads, pick up the half-dead ones and try and fix them and pick up the dead ones. You know, there's a high emotional toll on wildlife rescuers. And costs, most of which is not funded by the state. So, it's a big problem, just even financially, it's a big problem.
Yeah. Michelle, are you still hopeful of getting this corridor in?
Yes, we are. Yeah, we are, because it's, like you said, it's like play money for NALP. And if they can engineer the tunnels, they can engineer us a workable wildlife corridor. And, you know, we're still campaigning and, we'll be taking further action, and I'll keep you posted on that.
Yeah, well, one of the other arguments the government's put up, or the road authorities, North East Link people have put up, is that the crossing would encourage larger animals closer to Lower Plenty Road, increasing the risk to wildlife. Does that hold any weight?
No, it doesn't, because the animals are already there. They're already being killed. They're already being displaced. It's like what Joe sort of said, that they animals have got their modes of travel, and through damaged or fragmented wildlife corridors, and that's when they get into strife. And, you know, we have a lot of kangaroos in the area, and it's silly to say that we'll be attracting them from other areas. I know on the face of it sounds reasonable, but if the wildlife crossing is designed and engineered properly, you know, we think it would have some benefit.
Yeah, okay, we're just about to wind up, but any final comments from either of you?
No, but it's good.
Well, it's that, okay.
It's good to hear what happens there, though.
Yeah, I guess, Justin, that we are, you know, we're living near the project, people are impacted by the project, and we want a better project. And it's not too late, and we would also like our three Labor local members to actually start advocating for the community and not being cheerleaders for a project that is harming the community and the wildlife, you know, and our well-being. So we're expecting and demanding better, and that's why, you know, we're highlighting the issues.
Yeah, in fact, the Greens MP for North East Metro said, how can Jacinda Allen's Labor government justify the environment destruction of this project, and what more are they willing to risk in the name of more cars, more tolls and billions more in budget blowouts? So they don't seem to be, at least someone's coming out and saying it.
Yeah, we've had support from AVE, which has been fantastic. Yeah. But we need a lot more. We need our local members to actually be communicating and talking with their electorate and demanding a better project.
Yeah.
Because at the moment it's totally unaccountable.
All right. Well, good luck with that. We'll keep in touch with you and hope you knock them off.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Michelle. Thanks for your time this morning. Michelle Jervis is president of Friends of Banyul, and Joe Condon, of course, is fighting to have this made compulsory in all planning schemes. So that's Joe. Thanks for your time.